his wandering days are over. His loneliness is done when he died on the Gila Man Run.
Anthropologists tell us that one-third of all human beings who've ever lived on this planet have died at the hands of other human beings. That's right. One out of every three people who have ever drawn breath on this planet have died either through war, violence, or crime, having their life snuffed out at the hands of another, a human being. Anybody listening ever heard of the Hatfields and McCoys? Well, I'm sure you have. Did you know those were two real families that really had an honest-to-goodness feud? If you go back and study the history of it, or if you've watched any movies about it, it's the most famous feud in history. It's both fascinating, but it is extremely sad. Now, the McCoys lived on the Kentucky side of the border, and the Hatfields lived on the West Virginia side. The Hatfields fought for the Confederacy while the McCoys fought for the Union Army. Their feud started way back in 1878, lasted for 13 years until 1891. Between those years, the feud claimed more than a dozen members of the two families and caused the governors of both Kentucky and West Virginia to call up the state militia in order to restore order. Now, you're probably asking why the feud began in the first place. Believe it or not, it all goes back to a pig. That's right, a pig. Floyd Hatfield found a pig on his property and claimed it as his own. Randolph McCoy said it was not Hatfield's pig, but his. Hatfield believed the pig was his because it was on their land. The McCoy said the pig had notches on its ears that were clearly McCoy notches and not Hatfield notches. When the matter was taken to court, the McCoys lost because of the testimony of Stanton Hatfield, who was actually a relative of both families. The problem was the judge residing over the case was Anderson Hatfield, and the star witness wound up being killed by two of the McCoy brothers. And the fight was on. Now today, there are Hatfield-McCoy feuds going on everywhere. Did you know that? How do you know that, preacher? Because there are Hatfields married to McCoys. Now, I'm using that accommodatively, of course. There are Hatfield-McCoy brothers living under the same roof. There are Hatfields living next to McCoy neighbors. And there are Hatfields working with McCoys. You substitute your own name there if you're having a conflict with somebody. But it's true. It's a symbol of what's going on in society most of the time anymore. You don't have to look very far today to find conflict, find arguments, find fighting, lawsuits, domestic violence, severed friendships, constant conflict. It's everywhere. Really does raise a big question. Why can't we all just get along? Now, I wonder how many of you right now are living in the middle of some kind of a... That's right, you. Talking to you. How many of you right now are living in some kind of a conflict? I wonder who today is not speaking any longer to a relative because of the conflict. Who are contemplating getting a divorce because, well, of the conflict? Who absolutely hate their job because they are in constant conflict? Conflict, according to James, and we're in James chapter 4, by the way, in our series, How Faith Works. James tells us that conflict has a way of revealing whether or not our faith is real. As you're going to learn today, or be reminded, most of us already know all of this. Real faith handles conflict by surrendering that conflict to God. I want to give you today three steps that James says, if you take them, you can manage conflict. You can control conflict, and in many ways, many times, you can ultimately resolve conflict. You really can. You really can learn with most people, not everybody, but with most people. You really can learn to get along. Here's the first thing I want you to see this morning. Evaluate the cause of the conflict. If you're in a conflict with someone today, evaluate the cause of that conflict. James writes in James 4, verse 1, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? Now, James doesn't mince words. He doesn't waste time, does he? He gets right to the heart of the problem. He says right up front that a big part, if not a major part, of conflict between you and someone else is not the conflict that's going on between you, but the conflict that's going on within you. It comes from our desires. Now, it does take two to tango, I know that. And most of the time, whenever there's a conflict, usually both parties share at least some of the fault. The problem is nobody wants to admit their side of the problem. Have you ever noticed how whenever we are having conflict with someone, we try to explain it to someone else, and we will always move it into the third person. We will say something like, the reason why we are having conflict is because he did something or because she did something. I told you recently, I believe, that our girls, when they were growing up, one of their favorite expressions, favorite three words, it seemed like a lot of the time was, she did it, she did it. And James says, if you don't want to get to the root and the heart of the conflict you're having, he says, if you really want to do that, then you got to quit pointing fingers and you got to start looking in the mirror. Let me remind you that when you point your finger at somebody, you got three pointing back at you. He lets us in on a little secret. External conflict is always caused by internal conflict. Conflict that is occurring on the outside is caused by turmoil that's going on the inside. Now, we're all born with the same tendency to always want our way, aren't we? To want people to come over to our side of thinking, to want people to come over to our point of view. When two people each want their way, if those ways are different, then automatically that means only one person is going to have their way. And that's what causes conflict. I like an old saying I learned a long time ago. Every man ought to have his say, but no man ought to have his way. One said once about his own family, he said, one of the greatest wars that I ever had in my own family was with one of my sons, and it occurred over a conversation about where he was going to go to school, where he was going to go to college. For a number of reasons, the dad said he really felt in his heart that it would be best for his son to go to a certain college. A discussion, he says, quickly evolved into a debate, and the debate quickly escalated into something just short of a nuclear war. The dad finally said to his son, in a calm way. Son, you can go to college anywhere you want to go. And when he said that, the son said, really? The dad said, yeah. But if you want me to pay for it, you're going to such and such college. You see the problem there. The problem was they were both singing a version of that Frank Sinatra hit, I Did It My Way, only the version that they were singing, and we sing a lot, is I Want It My Way. That's always the cause of conflict. I want it my way. And most of the time. There are times, we'll look in just a few moments, where it's not always the case, but most of the time it is. Look at kids. Think about all the times that your kids got into a fight. Yeah, got into a fight. What was it over? Well, they wanted their way. It's my turn to sit up front. No, it's my turn to play the video game. It's my turn to watch whatever program I want to watch. It's my turn to play with, and the list goes on and on and on. The root cause of conflict, therefore, is selfishness. The reason why James says that our desires produces fights and quarrels is simply because the only way you can satisfy every single self-centered desire you have is by conquering the self-centered desire that other people have. Now, please understand me. I'm not saying that all conflicts are bad. Some conflict is good, and some conflict is necessary. I'm talking about the kind of Hatfield-McCoy conflict, which is really inexcusable. Let me tell you something you will learn if you live long enough. The vast majority of things that we argue about and fight about and quarrel about really aren't about anything worth fighting and quarreling about. They really aren't. But at least be honest enough to evaluate the fact that many times, if not most of the time, you do have a part in the conflict. If you do that, then you can take the second step. Now, first, you have to evaluate your part of the problem. And secondly, eliminate your part of the problem. When we don't get our way and conflict arises, here's what happens. James chapter 4, verse 2. You want something, but you don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight, you do not have because you do not ask God. When you don't get what you want, you don't get your way, what do you try to do? Well, you try to hurt those who won't give you your way, who won't give in to you, who won't stand their ground. They want to stand up for what they believe, and you can't get them to back down, but they will stand. I told you about the dad a moment ago. Got into the conflict with his son. Do you know that son didn't speak a word to his father for 3 months? Now, folks, we've all done that to other people. We've all tried to hurt others when we had a conflict with them. And when we didn't get our way, we tried to hurt them. Abraham Lincoln one day was walking down the street. His two sons were walking behind him. And this was back before the days of Secret Service protection. And so they were out taking a walk one day, just the three of them. A fellow walked by and he noticed the two sons behind him were arguing and bickering and fighting, yelling at each other. And somebody said to Mr. Lincoln, Mr. President, what's wrong with your kids? He said, the same thing that is wrong with the whole world. I have 3 apples and each boy wants 2. Until you understand, friends, your part of the problem, which is your own selfish desire to get your own way, you will never solve the conflict. You will never reconcile the relationship. The problem gets even bigger because ultimately your selfish desires will spill over even in your relationship with God. James goes on to say in James 4, verse 2, you do not have because you do not ask. Now, what's he saying? Well, what he is saying here is you would have some of the things that you desire if you would just simply ask God to give them to you at the right time instead of trying to get them your own way by running over someone else to get them. That is what real faith does. But do you know what we tend to do? We will spend days and weeks and months, and yes, even years, bitter, because things didn't go our way. And we will spend 30 seconds maybe praying that God will intervene on our behalf. Folks, wanting your way, regardless of what it does to anybody else or you, creates bitterness in one's heart. It'll create bitterness in your heart. Pain is inevitable in life. Bitterness, well, that's optional. And some of you listening this morning have chosen the latter. You've chosen bitterness. And bitterness causes us to hurt people. Hurt people end up hurting people. How many times would you say that husbands, have we tried to manage our wives by bullying them or getting angry with them and pushing them to let us have our way, hoping that they will be more sensitive to our leadership and more responsive to our particular position as the husband of the house? Maybe if we spent more time asking God to make us the kind of husband that we should have been to begin with, she would have been more than happy to follow. The problem just keeps growing, doesn't it? James says in James 4 and verse 3, when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. We are so selfish. We are so selfish that even our prayers are poisoned with our own selfish desires. When we come to God and say with God, we want our way, not yours, that's what we're saying. We treat God like a genie. And we pray like a magic lamp is there. We just rub it a little bit and a genie will pop out. Give us our desires. Give us what we want. Or we treat God like a heavenly bellhop that jumps up when we say jump and gives us what we want when we want it. Heard about a pastor that walked up to a little boy before service started. He was praying. He walked over to see what he was praying, and all he kept saying was one word over and over and over. The word was Tokyo, Tokyo, Tokyo. He just kept saying that word, praying that word. His little head was bowed, his eyes were closed, his hands folded. Tokyo, Tokyo, Tokyo. The pastor had to go on into the service, but after it was over, he found the little boy and he said, son, I saw you praying before the service started. Bless your heart. He said, just wanted to ask you a question. He said, yes, sir, what was it? He said, well, he said, I don't understand. He said, you just kept saying one word over and over and over. And it was the word Tokyo. He said, what did you mean by that? He said, yes, sir, that's what it was. He said, why in the world were you praying that? And the little boy said, well, sir, he said, I took a geography test last Friday, and I was asking God to make Tokyo the capital of France. That's kind of the way we are. We can get so selfish that we can't even pray for the right things. And not get them because we're praying for the wrong reason. Yeah, you can be praying sometimes for the right thing, but you're praying for the wrong reason and God's not going to respond. Not the way you want him to. For example, maybe a woman is married to a husband who drinks or who gambles. And she prays every day for that husband to become a follower of Jesus Christ. Do you know why she's praying that prayer? Oftentimes, not because she's really concerned about her husband's soul. Because if he does become a follower of Christ, she's hoping then that he'll not spend money on the wrong things, and she'll have more money to spend on what she wants to spend it on than when her husband spent it on liquor and was drunk. Now you say, Jerry, how in the world do you know that? I'm not saying it's true in every case, but you don't stay in ministry for 41 years and not know some of this stuff, folks. I've dealt with Mr. Public, and even several years before that. That's the way our minds work. You see, that's even the way my mind works sometimes, because I'm like you. I'm human. Here's someone praying that they would get another job. Is it because they want to go to a place where they can really be more effective for Christ, a better witness for Jesus, and they can put their skills to better use for the church? Nah, not really. Most often, it's just because they want to make more money, so they'll have more money to spend on themselves. We spend so much time praying for selfish requests, we wonder why God doesn't bother answering our prayers. Here's the point. If you are in the middle of a conflict, you need to quit focusing on what the other person is bringing to the table and start focusing on what you're bringing to the table. Evaluate the cause of the conflict. That's where you need to start. Then honestly look in the mirror and look inside of yourself and begin to eliminate your part of the problem. That is easier said than done. I know. But here's the way you do it. You elevate God's place of authority. Ah, preacher, I knew you were going to come back to God. Yeah, we always got to come back to God. We start with God, we're in the middle with God, and we got to end with God. Let's get to the real root of the problem. When you make up your mind that your philosophy is going to be, I will please myself. Now, don't leave me here. When you're at the point of your life when you're saying, I'm going to please me, I will get my way, I will make sure that I get what I want, then you automatically move God from the center of the stage. You automatically put God up on the shelf. James says in verse 6, James says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, or some one translation says, wherefore, God opposes the proud. The word therefore, being opposed to, is a military term that actually describes a full army that's ready for battle. And what God is basically saying is this: if you are so proud when you are in conflict with someone else that you aren't willing to admit that you are a part of the problem and you aren't willing to do your part to reconcile that relationship, you not only have a problem with that person, but you have a problem, God says, with me. God says, you have a problem with me. So how are you going to deal with your pride, friend? James 4, verse 7. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. As strange as it may sound, the only way to win the war over pride is surrender. There must be an unconditional surrender to the authority of God in your life. As a matter of fact, if there is any part of your life that is not completely and totally surrendered to what God wants for you, that is the part. That is then the part you'll always have conflict with other people. Do you remember the story of Achilles? He was an infant, and his mother tried to make him immortal by bathing him in this magical river. She held him by the heel and dipped him completely in the river. But she didn't dip the heel, and because of that, where she was holding him by the heels, she didn't dip the heel, and because of that, the only part of him that was vulnerable and that ultimately cost him his life was his heel, his Achilles. heal. Listen to me, folks. Any part of you that is not completely surrendered, completely covered by the blood of Christ, to the authority of God in your life, whether it is your desire for more money or more pleasure, bigger and better things, promotion at work, whatever it might be, that part which is not surrendered is the part that will cause you conflict. We now see the ultimate piece of advice that James gives to anybody and to everybody that's in the middle of a conflict, in the middle of a war, in the middle of a fight, and is not getting any better. James 4, verse 8, come near to God and he will come near to you. Let me ask you a question. Has there ever been a time you can think of in your life when you were closer to God than you are right now? If the answer to that question is yes, here's the second question. Does the problem lie with you or does it lie with God? The way to get what you really want out of life is to surrender what you want to God. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, if I surrender what I want to God, God will give me what I want? Well, maybe. Maybe not. But I'll tell you this, he will always give you what you need. Let me close by telling you about two brothers. One became a farmer, the other became a brilliant, wealthy lawyer. The lawyer visited his farmer brother one day and said, I can't believe you haven't made more out of your life. Look at me. I have investments on Wall Street. I've got powerful clients who are millionaires. I've got condos in the Caribbean. And you're stuck out here on this puny little farm. The farmer pointed out to his wheat field and said, brother, there are two types of wheat heads out there. Do you see the heads that are standing straight up? That is because there's nothing in them. They are empty. But do you see the other heads that are bent over? Well, that's because the heads are full of wheat. You show me any conflict that is going on anywhere, whether it's in a family, a marriage, or even between nations. If you let the parties involved get empty of themselves and what they want and full of God and what he wants, there is no conflict that cannot be solved. He would want me to remind you of that today. Until next Lord's Day, remember, keep looking to Jesus.